Willie, what kind of shirt you have on? What is that?
It's cotton.
It's cotton? What's on?
Are you
what's on the front?
It's a thing. It's a
rooster.
It's not. It's Liverpool Football Club.
Oh, what does mine say?
Yeah. And yours says out of office.
Yeah.
Where did you get that particular freebie?
I used to work at
FedEx. Listen, I can't wait to hear this, but let's do an older smart list first. Welcome to Smart List.
Smart.
Sweet, sweet Willie is over on the pond, across the pond. Is that what
across
we call
the pond?
It?
I'm in Liverpool.
Wait, why are you there?
My home away from home. I'm doing a little thing with the club.
Oh, I didn't know that.
With our friends at Tommy Hilfiger. Shout out Tommy Hilfiger.
There it is. We've got it.
And
was it ever Thomas? When did he go shorter with it? Have you asked him?
I haven't asked him. I'm gonna have dinner with him later. And,
it sounds like a perfect opportunity.
Which is why it's going to be. And
So, Shawnee, you're back in Los Angeles.
Oh, God, yeah.
After an incredible, successful run.
What a run.
What a run. He's got himself an Olivier Award already from this thing. We will see what our friends over at the Tony Academy.
This guy's talent knows no bounds.
No, Jay, the Olivier is from Good Night Oscar.
Oh, the Olivier was for Good Night Oscar. Is still
did
receiving awards.
Did you win an Olivier?
Yeah.
Yeah, he sure did.
No way.
Yeah, isn't that crazy?
But Shawnee, so we haven't started the award circuit yet for
Unknown. It's called The Unknown. But you can't because it's off Broadway. So
off Broadway has no awards?
It does,
and I got nominated for the one that they do, I forget what it's called, but
is it called Off Tony?
It was very nice. It's Off Tony, yeah.
Are they called the Tinnies?
The Tinnies.
And let me ask you a question: if you're off Broadway, do you need to go backstage and say hi to people? Or
no, you do not. You do not have to do that.
But
Sam Rockwell, your ears must have been burning. Sam came backstage. I know you're working with
Sammy Rock and Roll.
He's so nice. Mm-hmm.
He's the best. Yeah.
He's so sweet, yeah. And I just got back two nights ago. It was great. And by the way, you know, the adrenaline dump, right? Don't you guys feel that after you do a movie or a TV show or a play or anything like that, when you're done, you're just like, oh, man.
And usually you get sick because the body knows it's now I can be ill.
Right.
But you came back and what was your illness? Just basic nausea from all the saturated fats that you...
I ate so much. On the plane back, I had ordered everything that I could. I had
you order food on the plane?
Yeah, all the time. Yeah.
Is it like a menu?
Yes. I had the chicken, the beef. I had a hot fudge sundae.
You can't order two entrees on a flight.
You did, and I had like three pretzel rolls. I was so hungry because I hadn't eaten in 3 months because of the play. I lost all that weight. Anyway, who cares?
Wait, ready? Why didn't you eat during the play?
Because it's the whole thing I told you. You have to watch what you eat, when you eat, and you can't eat before a show because of acid reflux, and then you can't talk because then you're constantly clearing your throat.
So,
it's just like a whole thing.
Well, where does the spaghetti bolognese with a side of Swedish fish fit in?
So that comes after.
Got it.
After when I get home, after I texted you guys a two-show day. I'm like,
No, we saw the pics, man.
Yeah.
You don't think the acid reflux would come from a midnight bowl of bolognese?
No, because I stay up long enough for it to not happen.
Oh,
six
yeah.
or 7 hours.
No.
Stay up. It's not like you're going for a walk. When you say stay up, you're just sitting on the couch and just letting it sit.
This is correct.
Why don't you sleep in an upright position? That way you can just eat until the last possible moment.
I do.
You ought to get like a sleepable turlet. You know what I mean? That has like thing, and then you could be.
Sure.
Yeah, remember how like in Clockwork Orange he had his eyelids taped open? Yeah, maybe you do that with your valve. You know,
just a tube right in there with bolognese,
and just go right to sleep.
Guys, my guest today.
Why don't you just throw it in the toilet and cut out the middleman? You know what I mean?
Throw it in the toilet.
I hope your guest understands your dark, dark, offensive humor.
He loves it, actually, which is good.
Okay.
Yeah, my guest couldn't speak until he was almost 4 years old. We're going to learn about that. When he finally did, he says he sounded like a member of the Soprano family. His mom was chief medical officer at the New York City Fire Department. She survived the collapse of the South Tower on September 11th.
Oh, my God.
He once went through 12 dumpsters looking for his wife's lost engagement ring. They named their son Cosmo. He co-owns a decommissioned Staten Island ferry, which he has called the single dumbest purchase of his life. Please welcome the longest-serving weekend update anchor in Saturday Night Live history.
Got it.
It's the hilarious and charming Colin Jost.
I think I got it first.
Colin Jost, review yourself.
What's up? Michael Che here. Hey, how's it going, guys?
What is up?
What's up, guys? That was I loved hearing that you guys
rundown.
That can't be true.
I learned a lot about you guys.
Yeah.
Oh, you're. It's, by the way,
all of it's unsurprising. Right?
You're in your office right now. I can tell by the ceiling.
Yeah.
Is that true?
Yes, these definitely asbestos ceilings that are still here.
Those are the kind of ceilings that you can stand on a chair, lift up one of them, and hide stuff up there. Put the square right back down.
Definitely, like
you could have. That's wow, no country
you watch
for
a lot
old
of
men.
Movies.
This one you see has a large stain of some kind that's been here since before I moved in.
Yeah, something up there is leaking that was hidden.
They came to the SNL offices like 5 years ago, and they said, listen, over the summer, you got to clear stuff out. We're removing asbestos from all the offices. And I was like, I've been in this office for 15 years.
Like, no way.
It's too late. It's way too late.
Really?
Yeah. Wow.
They just found that out?
You ought to call one of the, you know, those commercials that come on late at night with those doctors. You should join a class action.
I have that, and I've got my vaginal mesh that I've got to call about, too.
No.
Yeah.
Is it
Yeah, what's
separated?
The progress on that?
Good.
The mesh is separating?
Yeah, the mesh is... It sounded great at the time, you know? He's like, you want to do this vaginal mesh. It sounds so cool, but then...
Right, of course. Yeah.
Just by the way, what is vaginal mesh?
Yeah, by the way, I wanted to ask too, but I was afraid I didn't know.
Get more serious on the question.
Well, I did want to get back to the asbestos, and I wanted to pitch Colin, because I think I've pitched you guys before, and I don't remember your response, but Colin, could you please... Let me know if you think this. I'm thinking about getting into a mold removal business based on just the company name that I've got nailed down. It's called Adjacent Abatement, and I think if I could just go into that business, I'll do pretty well just based on
the name,
title, and just the vans,
The joke alone,
the paint on the side of the vans, the bus benches, stuff like that. I'm pretty sure I'll get some nice traffic.
Oh, when people have extensive mold in their house, they just want to laugh. They just want a funny. They want to know they can laugh.
They're looking for a pun.
Honey, I hope we find some mold because I just want to call it Jason Abatement.
That's good. By the way, I've never heard that.
It's pretty good, right?
Colin, thanks so much for doing this and being here.
Thanks for having me.
Colin, it's a busy, what is it, Thursday night? This is a busy time for you.
We're off. We're off this week. I just came here because I was doing something nearby, and it seemed like a good place to. It's so quiet here.
Well, that doesn't sound shady. Doing something nearby.
Yeah. I was doing something nearby. Edit that out.
Are you bugging Lauren's office again?
Not in a way he would suspect.
Have you seen the new Lauren documentary?
I did. We went to the premiere of it that was at Lincoln Center last week, and have you guys seen it yet? Or
no,
yeah, I want to.
It was funny. There's a lot of people in it are really funny, and I found it kind of moving. I don't know that I even necessarily learned anything about him. In fact, in some ways, he seems less known of having seen it. But it was. I found it kind of moving because he is very much him. And it felt like it was in his voice, weirdly. I don't know.
Yeah.
I love that he finally allowed somebody to like kind of dig in, right?
Yeah.
But I think the thing that people don't know about Lauren, and you can attest to this, Colin, is that Lauren's really funny.
Yeah.
Lauren is
very dry.
Really, really funny. Yeah.
Yeah. And he is funny in it. Like he's funny in it. Someone will be talking about an idea on a whatever Friday night and pitch something, and he'll just look at them and be like, idiot. he'll do things that are very out of character and always very surprising and funny. But it is. It's fun. He's funny in it. And he lets them go to, like, his house in Amagansett, his house in Maine, and you see, like, not like all inside of the house, but like you see where, why he goes to those places to kind of escape and be in the woods and be in nature. I was surprised at that.
Yeah, he seems very kind of, when I worked there, or when I did the show 83 years ago, he was always a little, he's scary if you don't know him, you know, because he's a little off-putting. He doesn't speak much, so you don't know where you stand with him. At least that was my.
Yeah, he's kind of, he's kind of reserved until.
What if Colin's just like, what are you talking about? He talks to everybody. Like, he talks to everyone.
He's never.
Did he not talk to him?
He's like the most outgoing guy.
Huh, he's like one of the most.
Ton of jokes and backstabbing.
You gotta slow him down. He's so hilarious.
Colin, I think the first time we ever met was only last year at Robert Downey's birthday party, right? I think.
Yeah,
was
I think
the first
so.
Time. And you were so kind enough, you remember this, you mailed me the form that you have to fill out to get a face mold on Saturday Night Live. You mailed it. Do you remember mailing that to me?
For Louis, to get it to do with Louis?
I don't know, but it was like a format with my Polaroid on it and all my measurements and my head measurements to get like a mold. And you just sent it to me. I was like, oh, that's so nice.
I happened to, see this, I think Jody, who does all the wigs, and Louis does, I think they had all these things and they were kind of getting rid of them. And I was like, wait, some of these are, I'd be cool. Like, they're also, some of them are historic and everything. It would be cool.
Yeah, they're cool. It's cool. It's like a cool memento to have.
And did you go ahead and get the face mold measurement, Sean?
Yeah.
Did you have a couple of spares made up?
Of my face?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Well, just walk
could
through.
Let me ask you this. Could Jason and I make masks and go as you for Halloween?
if you wanted to scare the shit out of people.
Or just target practice and stuff like that. Why were you excited about pursuing a face mold?
Well, you have to. You did it. You hosted Saturday Night Live. Didn't you get a face mold?
I don't remember, and I don't think track down the information on how to get one myself.
It's a horrible process.
So indignant. It's unbelievable.
God. I don't know what goes on over there with you and Scotty.
You probably did it, and you probably blocked it out because you can't breathe. You're breathing through just straws in your nose because your mouth has to stay steady.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's very claustrophobic.
But did you get information from Colin about how you can go ahead and get another face mold of yourself?
All that information is on the form that they make for you. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right.
So now I have it. Anyway, let's move on.
No,
so,
we're not going to. Now you have it, and that's a great thing?
Yeah, why not?
Just in case you might want to make a face mold of yourself.
Unless my head is shrunk or grown or something, it should be the same, right, Colin?
Oh, man.
No, you've got to get a new model every 5 years.
By the way, right, Colin? Like, as if Colin fucking knows and or gives shit about how this process.
He keeps tabs on me.
He just found a piece of paper and he was like, here's the person that you should talk to. He's not invested.
No. Then I went back to the files. I compared. I was like, well, these measurements are a little off from the last time.
That's what I'm saying. All right, Colin.
You know the famous thing about Jeff Daniels got it done, right, when he was hosting?
No way.
And they set the mold in the wrong way, so it stuck fully to his face, and he was stuck with just the straws in his nose for like hours, and they had to chisel it off of him, and he had like all this sort of scarring, but like almost burns from it, and then had to host the show.
No way.
Yeah.
That's a fucking nightmare, man.
You could still sip Coca-Cola through. Like, he could still drink something.
Oh, yeah, so he was fine.
Don't worry, Sean. You can still
taste of Coke.
Yeah, you can still have your sugar sodas, Sean.
Yeah.
Sean's worry. Like, yeah. Has anybody ever put Swedish fish in a blender?
Okay. What's your go-to tackiest awful snack, Colin? What are you ashamed that you still eat?
Yeah, you look like you keep it pretty tight.
I'm fine. I don't eat great. Like, I don't have any discipline to eating and drinking, but I'll eat Swedish fish actually at SNL because there's like a pot. Every Tuesday when there's a writing night, they used to come in when you're up all night and just pour a pile of candy, like cover the entire writer's room in candy. And so I would have all Tuesdays, I used to, eat candy all the time. And then being up all night, there was one time in Lauren's office Wednesday after the table read where I was having like heart palpitations.
Yeah. I have that in my notes.
I thought I was having a heart attack.
Yeah, I thought that was from stress or something.
It was a combination of stress, not sleeping, and also having all this sugar. And yeah. I thought I was having a heart attack and like called the doctor and in Lauren's office. And
was it AFib? Do you know?
Paddles wants to know what it was.
Well, Jimmy Kimmel calls me Paddles because I've had so much AFib so many times.
It was probably a panic attack essentially that was brought on by
But you haven't had one since?
No. And the doctor I went to is like, you got to try to sleep a little and you can't have sugar all night like that. Or, you know, I was like, whatever.
Sugar doesn't make you, sugar makes me so tired that sugar peak and then the crash, I go right to sleep.
Doesn't affect me. I can run or sleep. It doesn't matter. Here we go.
But then it was just at an age where I was like, it didn't matter. And then it caught up with me at some point. I was like, ugh.
Colin, wait, talk to me about this. I found this fascinating. What do you mean you didn't talk to you were 4 years old? What does that mean? And then I read that it wasn't Tony Soprano that you sounded like.
Carmel.
Because I was like, oh, he must have compared himself to Tony Soprano when he opened up his mouth. But what do you mean you didn't talk?
No, I said Carmella Soprano.
Carmella.
Oh, Carmella.
That's right. Carmella.
Like I just videos of me like trying to like sell a bike that I had that's like, yeah, it's pretty good. It's got two wheels. You know, you can get on it. It's got brakes. But I'm genuinely talking like that. And I'm six
really?
Or seven. Yeah.
When does a kid usually talk? I forget with my kids. It was like, what, like one or like 18 months, something like that? They start to
put stuff together? I think it's typically like, 18 months around that. And I think it's almost always before two. Or usually.
Yeah.
And
girls before guys, I think.
Yes, yeah. And there's people are a little later, but I think it was just getting to a little bit of a more extreme place where they didn't know what was going on, my parents.
What were your first words?
Will.
No shit.
Wow. Yeah, I'm not just saying that. I mean,
No.
Of course, I believe, I'm looking at your face and I know that you're not just saying that. That's incredible.
And that's it. And then I didn't say anything else for five more years.
Why bother? Why bother?
And then it was Jason.
And then it was Jason. Jason Abatement.
Jason Abatement.
Because there had been so much mold in my brain. So I needed.
And it was nothing. They didn't pursue any sort of reason. There was no diagnosis. It was just, you just weren't ready.
My mom said she wasn't worried because it seemed like I was comprehending everything that they were saying. I just wasn't saying anything.
A lot of
And then I went to like a speech specialist at Staten Island University Hospital, which maybe sounds like a setup for
I mean, you do your own. Everybody can do their own math on that one. I like the idea you were just nodding along, like you're nodding along and doing a lot of winking. He was winking a lot at people.
So we knew he was cool.
Oh, doctor, no, he's following.
He was winking and doing the hands where he makes the curve hourglass of a woman's figure, but I don't think he's fine.
And then walking, there was no pausing in the walking. The walking was on time.
I was walking so much.
I
couldn't stop walking.
Okay,
all through the night. It was basically they based that horror movie this year, Weapons, on me because I would just walk out through the woods.
Right, the arms out like you're flying. Right.
Do you know? I remember when my middle son Abel was, he wasn't walking. He was like 13 months. He was a little bit later, and you know his older brother had walked a year. Mm-hmm. So I know. So we were nervous. Uh-huh. Well, not really, but and I remember Amy being like. When she's like, he's not walking. He's not walking. And I go, she goes, he's never going to. I go, look out on the street. Do you see people dragging themselves by their hands? Pulling themselves along the sidewalk? He's going to get it. Okay?
He's going to pick it up, yeah.
And then you ask people, like, what are you doing? Like, I never picked up walking.
It wasn't for me.
I never picked it up.
In New York, there might be like 20 to 40 of those people. Yeah. You know?
Well, that was just not for them.
Yeah, it's just not for them.
We'll be right back.
And now, back to the show.
All right, so I want to talk about something you're probably so sick of talking about, but I don't know anything about it, which is the Staten Island Ferry you bought with Pete Davidson. Because I've seen you tell jokes about it on the show, on Saturday Night Live, and I always laugh because I kind of know the gist of it, but why and what was the plan and what's the goal and all of that? Because you paid, like, you have to, you still have to pay, like, a dot. Like, don't you, these are you still paying
for
it? These
are, like, exact questions a financial advisor asks me. Like, what is the plan and what is the...
Is it just fun?
But was it because of your, because these guys don't, Jason and Will don't know, but when I was doing my research about your reading, is the journey you took an hour and a half every single day to go to school from Staten Island to Manhattan, and you took the Staten Island Ferry?
I took this, this one.
Oh, you did?
Usually it was this one, which is, again, is I explained to my friends, and they're like, yeah, but you also took the subway. You didn't want to buy one of those. or a bus. But it was, it's named after JFK. It's named, it was commissioned for John F. Kennedy after he died. And it was usually the 7 a.m. ferry that I took. Because I went up to this high school called Regis High School that's up on the Upper East Side, and it's free if you get in. It's a really great school. And so most people that go don't live in Manhattan. Most people come from Brooklyn, Queens, Staten Island, Jersey, even upstate.
And it was about an hour and a half every day?
Yeah, I took the bus.
There and back?
Come on.
Each way, yeah. Bus, ferry,
subway. How old were you?
86th. 14. I mean, I did it 14 to 18.
Oh, you know,
it's just high school. They don't have it. But it was so, I mean, now it seems like a lot, but now everything seems like less of a trip. You know, it's like so, you know, and I was never, you know, and once you're there, you're like in Manhattan with your friends. So it was kind of, it was very fun.
You'd use the time for homework and whatnot? Like you wouldn't really feel the,
Yeah, I rarely did homework at home because it was such a, you know, trip.
Jason went to school on an actual bus. The school was on a bus.
Which is true.
On a bus.
Which is true. Yeah.
On a bus.
Is that true?
That's true. For a while.
How does that work?
Not well.
A lot of massaging. That's also true.
There's some massage.
It's also true. Ask him. Please call and follow up.
What is the nature? Why? How does massaging get involved? No bus I'm ever on is like, and we do massages?
This is one of my favorite areas. Yeah. This is second only to Ernest Borgnine jerking off all over his house. Keep going. Jason, go.
This was an experimental school, Colin. A friend of my father's started one of these things in his home out in Calabasas. And it was called Heartlight, one word.
Heartlight, like L-I-G-H-T, light?
That's right. And there were, because Calabasas is, as you know, you're familiar with the city here, it's a great deal of traffic, about another hour and a half, just like yours, from Calabasas into the city. And so there were city days and country days. City days, we'd go in and see the museums.
Oh, my God.
And so they thought a good way to take advantage of that traffic time is to run classes in the back of this bus, you know, because they're an incredibly progressive group. And so we did that. There'd be some motion sickness. And then on the country days, that's when we'd get into all the fun electives like massage.
It's true.
Teepee building. It wasn't an accredited school. Colin, I don't want to paint a
fucking dying
inaccurate picture here. But
I've never seen Will laugh harder.
God, it's funny. The most fun. I love Jakey Bates so much. I paid for it.
Out of my own pocket, I was forced to pay for the school.
And not 13. Like regular bus fare, like school fare.
No.
Did you do some bus riding? Was the massages extra, and did you tip?
Did they pay you?
It depends if I'm giving or receiving on that. On Tuesdays and Thursdays was the massaging.
God,
so, Colin,
favorite.
What a great, it sounds like such a great idea and concept. Like, well, we might as well use the journey for the school.
Sure.
Yeah. By the way, that part makes kind of sense in that way, right? Like that, it's
you
a long
have
way.
To applaud them for the idea.
Yeah.
But,
And then you're sitting so long on the bus, you got to provide massages. It starts getting away from it pretty quick.
The donut they had to give each kid to sit on. You know, there's so much class time on the bus. Not great.
Anyway, Kyle, Lynn.
Well, so anyway, so I texted Pete, which is the wrong person to text with when you have an idea like this. And I was like, should we buy this?
Right, because he's going to say yes.
The city was auctioning it. And he was immediately like, fuck yeah, we got to do this. So, and I texted my dad, who's a teacher on Staten Island, and he literally was like, did you do your homework? Which is such a teacher thing to say. And I was like, Dad, I'm just sort of texting you as a formality. I already bought the boat. And then I texted Scarlett, like, guess what? We own a ferry now. And she was like, we.
Did it stay in operation?
It was in operation until there was a new boat that came in. And the new boat cost like $300 million to build. So right. I was like, I'm getting an old one for only $280,000.
Right.
This is a deal.
That's all the ferry cost was $280,000?
Yeah. And I thought I was thinking in a real estate way, if you put it somewhere, it's 70,000 square feet.
Oh my God.
So I was
gosh.
Like, if you put that on a dock in Manhattan, you've suddenly got basically a building on the waterfront.
Yeah, party space.
And on that square footage value.
Was that the pitch to Scarlett?
That could be a school.
That could be like three schools. Kindergarten,
and elementary school, and high school.
Did you ever explore that opportunity? Like that you could actually park it there on the East River and kind of have yourself a house. Right.
Yes,
there,
we are in the process of doing that, and it's just
A
long process because all the waterfront stuff is just there's environmental there's so we're in that process, and I think we're actually getting close to that process having a dedicated spot. Yes, I joke about it a lot, but it is, and we've done some events on it where we really have already made back the money we've invested and the money we've spent on stuff to dock it and all that. So it's very misreported that it is some sort of crazy money pit.
Hey, man, I'm not your dad. But you don't have to prove it.
God, it's going to be fine. It's going to be fine.
Wait, is this
a good financial sign where you're like, it's fine?
What's going to be, what's a home run? What's the goal with it once it's parked there?
I think a home run for me is like, it's a thing that could be used for an event space, but also has like a norm, like an everyday purpose of like, Two versions of it to me are like it could be an operating entertainment like club, like a place where you can go, like you could have parties or there's regular parties on
bottle
it.
Bottle service or whatever.
And then like I grew up in Staten Island, I went to this place, it was called the Great Hill Swim Club. That was like a swim club where people would just go and the kids could all hang out, the adults could hang out. And I could imagine creating a place like that that's not like a weird fancy members club, but is actually more like middle class in Manhattan.
And you just pay as you go. You can go pay to use it.
Yeah, and you play it. And like there's a pool on the top and a diving board off the top. And you have these crazy views.
You can just dive into the East River and enjoy yourself.
Really enjoy yourself. Really swept down into
You're really pitching a swim club on the East River?
Yes, like, but a pool on the roof deck.
But the pool.
Diving board into the pool, not into the river.
It's like a cruise ship that doesn't leave.
A cruise ship that doesn't leave, but for families, and it would be actually a great, like, people would spend summers there. And then it's also movable. So then half the year would be Miami, and it would be, you'd have that in the winter when it's cold here, and you'd have summer there, and I think it could be a great thing.
Miami. Now I'm seeing the Carmela Soprano in you. This is your picture.
Then we go to Miami, we take over the high lie racket.
Oh, my God.
So I got to say, I'm kind of sold on this, Colin. You kind of got me a little bit.
And then you'd have weddings, and like people already want to rent it out, and we will do, we've done it a couple times, but we'll do it when we have a permanent spot. It just makes the economics way better.
Yeah. Yeah, mm-hmm.
And this is all about economics, ultimately.
Sure. Obviously,
yeah. Sure.
And then you registered in Liberia. What's the?
Yes, we're very open to pirates. If anyone wants to come,
I can't wait. I'm going to approach it on a Zodiac with a mouthful of cat. QAC.
Are we? I feel like the cat usage is falling. Have you been doing any recently? I feel like we've not.
What is cat? What is cat?
Off.
Will?
It's the cat.
It's like a plant you chew that has like a almost a combo of cocaine and hallucinogenic.
QAT.
The thing I read about it, that it makes you, it's the phrase I read was, it makes you immune to atrocities, which is such a great description.
I think they use it a lot. There was a lot of usage of it sort of in the Horn of Africa, right? Am I right about that? And a lot of, they accused a lot of these pirates of, who would go and commit piracy of chewing on it. And it makes, it makes you just do crazy shit.
It's an appetite suppressant as well. It could give you, it's like a, you know, Zempic-ish, you know. God,
this sounds like a fucking silver bullet. Where does one, do you need to be in the, on the southern tip of Africa to find it?
No, up in, like, up near sort of Somalia, Ethiopia, up in there.
Good. Eritrea. So it's closer. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Eritrea, yeah, like right on the, it's very private. You see these huge bushels of it. It's terrific. I got a guy. I'll get you a number. Are you on WhatsApp?
All right.
Colin, first question for our guest today.
Wait, Colin, let me take it. So, Colin, you go to this school. You go to this great school because you're really smart, clearly.
Well, no. Well, say the school is Harvard.
No, I'm talking about the school he went to.
Oh, that one. Oh, sorry. Okay.
For Regis. Yeah. Regis.
From there, you get into Harvard, evidently based on your academic merits, I'm guessing.
As opposed to...
What do you mean? I'm not a traditional athlete?
Yeah, like...
Well, I'm not a D1 athlete in your mind?
You don't have your a name on a building, is what I'm saying. Like, or,
that's true.
Yeah.
So, not even on my own ferry.
Right. So at Harvard... Go ahead, Will.
No, I was going to say, you go, take it over, Harvard.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, you got involved with Lampoon, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and then you wrote 80 pieces before you got one accepted. What's so funny?
Yeah, trying out for it.
Tell me.
There was a time, Colin, 5 years ago, where Sean
was
nominated
for
best interviewer
on any podcast anywhere.
The follow-up for him and his questions has been...
And since that nomination, he's gotten tight, and he can't spit it out.
No, because
you be quiet.
No, because I wrote down a bunch of stuff that I actually want to know.
Baby girl, you get it. Give him your best one. Take some time. No, like, find the best one in there, and you give it to him.
Well, wait.
80 sketches. None of them picked up, right?
I would stop at
80
two.
Failures.
But I would stop at two. Like you really
How did you get involved in Lampoon?
That's so much better.
I didn't know about it. Did you guys have any awareness, like, had you ever heard of it? I mean, I had heard of the National Lampoon.
Yeah,
the movies.
But I didn't know what it meant.
I didn't understand what it was until I started knowing some of those SNL guys who'd come out of it, right? Yeah.
So for Tracy, it is literally a magazine there at the school?
Like it's just a magazine that has been there. It's actually the 150th anniversary is coming up in like a week. So we're going back, like a bunch of, like Conan and a bunch of people are all going to go back and for this thing, which but it just was like a student magazine. And then
like a precursor to like, kind of like something like The Onion or even like Mad Magazine, right? Something like that.
Yeah. And they started, people from there started like Spy Magazine back in the day, which they did like Lampoon magazines and yearbooks and stuff. And then
Spy Magazine was, I remember it in New York in the 90s. Spy Magazine was phenomenal.
Yeah, I loved it. Yeah.
It was so good. Yeah, it was, and there were so many people, you mentioned Conan, so many incredible comedy minds, sort of big sort of icons of comedy, you included, have come out of the Lampoon.
Yeah. It was like back in the day, it was a lot of writers, like literary writers, you know, like John Updike and George Plimpton and George Santayana and all these like people. And also business, like William Randolph Hearst was a member.
Oh, wow.
There's a business board. So he helped fund the building that's there, like this Lampoon Castle. And he and Isabella Stewart Gardner, who had the museum in Boston, she collected a lot of stuff that went to that museum on the same trip with him, and a lot of the stuff he got went to the Lampoon, which is cool.
And it's a bit of a feeder for SNL too, isn't it?
Yeah.
So like around the 70s, 80s, a lot of it with this guy, Jim Downey, who I'm sure you guys have met through these, but he went to SNL he was a writer the first year at SNL, of SNL. And And then after that, people kind of saw that you could write in comedy instead of necessarily only writing novels. And then people started getting into it there. But I didn't know, have any awareness of it when I went, like I went to school for economics, weirdly, and I didn't have any idea that there was a humor magazine or anything like that. And I had always done comedy things, but you didn't know it was really a job. You just did it with your friends.
It wasn't a destination for you to get into comedy necessarily.
I didn't know you could really. Didn't seem like a real thing. And so that was the first place where I went and people just were really funny and I wanted to hang out there. And then I started learning that people would graduate and go apply and work at different shows.
And so did you just apply for SNL? How did that happen?
Yeah, you just cold submitted. I actually submitted
a packet.
Yeah.
And then it was just the wrong time of year. I submitted it and so no one read it.
No agent, no nothing. You just did it yourself.
No.
You mailed it in yourself.
No agent, nothing. And I submitted and no one looked at it because it was the wrong time of year. And then the next time, you know, it was like the next summer. And then I ran into someone who had been in the Lampoon, who was like, I heard you have to submit in the summer in like June or July, whatever the deadline was. And so I put together another packet and submitted it then. And I was, you know, I was just lucky there was a ton of turnover. I wrote like six sketches. Okay. And there was a bunch of writers that left. And then I got like Tina was one of the head writers, Harper Steele. And they liked something that was in there and brought me in to interview. And then I interviewed with Lorne, which was insane. And then just was very lucky that there was an extra spot. And I was probably the last person hired. And I got hired with Sandberg and Sudeikis and Bill Hader and Kristen Wiig. And then the Lonely Island guys, Yorma and Akiva. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And a guy, Brian Tucker, who came from...
Tucker and Sudeikis was just hired as a writer first for that first season.
Yeah. That was, he just started, he had just got hired into the cast when I started. So that was the eight of us
And how old were you when you started?
22.
So you go into school to study economics. Was there ever a thought that there would be a career in economics, or was it just, I gotta declare a major and let's have it be this?
I think it was I thought I could maybe work. I mean, I interned at like Merrill Lynch when I was in high school. And
wow.
I just thought that was, in Staten Island, like there were certain, all my family was firefighters. Like my whole mom, like my mom was in the fire department, my grandpa, my great grandpa. So that was like a clear path I knew. And then from Staten Island, like people would go take the ferry to Wall Street. There were people that worked in finance. Yeah. And then obviously there was I knew about being a doctor or being a lawyer. Like those were the kind of jobs that I understood. And so I sort of thought I would do something in that range. Like I would do work in finance, or I would try to be a doctor someday or try to be a lawyer or something. Uh-huh.
And then so then you start to get the kind of this bee in your bonnet for comedy. Did you like talk to me about the calculation you were making you're sitting at Harvard where you really whatever field you decide to study and get your diploma in, get your degree in, you've got a pretty good sort of base salary to assume there. And so like picking what you're going to get your degree in is kind of, you're declaring what your life is going to be and it's going to be pretty good. And so you're thinking comedy, economics, or I can study this, that. At what point were you kind of like all in, it's going to be, I'm going to go into comedy writing, or did you mitigate that risk by minoring in something else? Like, just walk me through that.
My parents definitely were worried, you know, just once I was going down a comedy path. I mean, when I was there, I switched from economics to... When I declared I was going to be in economics, but then when you actually had to declare, I studied Russian literature. Like I went...
That's lucrative.
I was reading a bunch of books and so I was like... And then at some point I had to learn Russian. I had to live in St. Petersburg for a summer, and I was going down that path.
Let's pause there for one second.
Yeah.
Why Russian literature? What was super interesting?
Are you a Russian asset?
Great cover.
I'm open to it. Are they asking? I just liked the books. I just liked reading. I read in high school, I read some Nabokov and Tolstoy and Dostoevsky books in senior year. I liked them, so I wanted to read more. And then it just kept going down that line. Like, I didn't have a plan for it. I certainly wasn't assuming it was going to be a career.
Right.
Can you speak Russian?
I was, yeah, fluent in Russian.
Wow.
That's crazy.
Wow. That's awesome. Okay. All right. So then,
I realized, I guess, when I was at the Lampoon, that most of the things I did in my life leading up to that were kind of comedy versions of what I did. Like, I ran the school newspaper, but I did the comedy, you know, wrote comedy for it rather than, like, regular news. I was working at a newspaper, but I mostly wanted to write comedy there. I performed in plays and musicals, but I really only cared about the comedy part of it, not the serious part of it. I did speech and debate, but I only did funny, like, oratories that I wrote that were kind of versions of comedy or performed funny things and didn't do any, you know. So I started realizing that that was probably where my interest was, even if I was doing it in these other ways, and that there's not really a funny version of finance.
Right.
Well, again, along with abatements, it's not,
unless you buy a Staten Island Ferry.
But yes, then it is.
There's certainly some more predictable financial security in the lane of economics as opposed to the world of comedy.
Mm-hmm. You're talking about it. You're talking about it, like, making the bet on it and going all in.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did. I just did. I didn't have another plan. And I honestly don't know that I could have imagined then going to law school or after that. I think I just decided that whatever version of it was going to end up being, I was going to enjoy being around people that were funny and doing things that I tried things that were funny. And
regardless,
the lifestyle didn't necessarily matter.
It's so great. I mean, I'm sorry. A reason I keep hammering on this because, you know, I've got a daughter that's in her first year of college, and even my youngest, the 14-year-old, she's, you know, they're both sort of like, you know, as kids do, wondering about, you know, am I doing the things that I should be doing to set myself up for the best possible, you know, life? Am I making the right decisions? And I keep saying, well, as long as you're pointed at something, a lot of opportunity comes your way. And so you're going to see some forks in the road that might not necessarily be, you know, the lane you're on right now. And that's good. That's okay. But you're not going to find those forks unless you're driven in some direction on something. It doesn't matter what that is. And so I guess you're sort of a great example of that, that you're driving towards economics and you found comedy.
Yeah. And for her too, like, I mean, I think the peer element of it is so important to me. You know, you find people that are serious about something, even if it's comedy, and are really driven or are really, you know, and then you learn from them, you're competitive in a healthy way with them, you're hearing about opportunities from them eventually, you know, like when you're trying to do things, or I think that's so important too. And so that you're not doing it in a vacuum.
Right.
We'll be right back.
All right, back to the show.
So you go to SNL that year that you mentioned with all those dudes. How long was it before you got the update chair?
Yeah, did you go with the intention of wanting to do update, or did you go, or did it just happen?
Oh, no.
Or like,
No. I wouldn't have conceived of that. I think
You know, Carlin, I called you in here because I think you're ready. What?
He
was
did
it kind of like
did,
that?
He did call me. Yes, I didn't even know why he was calling me in.
Yeah.
And he's like, so you think you could do update? Like, asking me.
Yeah.
And I was like,
meanwhile, you had only been a writer on the show for a year or two or three?
No. I'd been there for a long time. So, I had been there for a long time. I was there, I was probably there 8 years or something, seven or 8 years.
Yeah, that's what I was getting at. Yeah.
And because I,
not on
and
camera.
I, so I got SNL. Yeah. All I would have been happy to have any job in comedy, right? Like, I applied everywhere that had a job. I wrote a Arrested Development spec script when I was going out.
I feel
out.
Like you told me this once.
And this, no maybe way. I did. Maybe I did tell you. And
that sounds familiar. Oh my God, I want to read that.
What was Job's story? It doesn't matter.
It was Job A's story or B's story?
It doesn't matter. Who cares?
I'm not sure he was in it.
Yeah, Job might have been a real Job episode. Can I tell you the one thing I remember about it, which is that it was for George Michael was self-conscious and wanted to lose weight. And so he tried joining what he saw was a recreation society, but but it was a recreation society. And he got cast as Ben Franklin, and so ended up gaining a bunch of weight.
That's really funny.
Great bit.
So dumb.
Oh my God, so Mitch Hurwitz would have loved that. That's a great bit.
So I wrote, applied all these places, and I was very, you know, very lucky to get hired at SNL. And I felt like then I just wanted to be good at that and figure it out and enjoy it. I loved.
No on camera aspirations.
No, not. Yeah. I mean, I had performing aspirations. Right. I just didn't think of it always as SNL related. Like right. I did stand up.
Right.
So while that time, I'm doing stand-up in New York. So
oh, you are? Okay.
Yeah, while I'm writing, I would go after, when there's nights that you could get out, and I would go do stand-up like three
at
or four
the Cellar
times.
Or whatever. Were there ever any summer, like end of seasons of SNL, and you can be as honest as you want to be, where you were like, you know what, I'm going to move. I'm going to leave. I want to do something else. Like, did you ever have one of those moments in those 8 years before you got the update chair?
Yes. Because there was sort of a little bit of a, like, you know, I had a journey as a writer there where I got promoted to like a writing supervisor and then I got promoted to be head writer. And that was like a real honor that I loved the idea of getting to do that someday. So that was really important to me. And I felt excited about that. I found it to be a really nightmarish job in a lot of ways because you're suddenly doing the same job you're doing, but you're also having to manage everyone you're working with.
Right.
And that was a very weird period of time for me because it also coincided with getting Update. Like, it almost exactly coincided. So
no,
I suddenly,
really?
Yeah, it was like maybe a year or half a year that I was a head writer and then got Update. And but I had my only, as I was there for a little longer, I did like performing. I did like doing stand-up. And honestly, I wanted to do some version of not necessarily acting like in a serious way, but performing in some way, in a comedy way.
Yeah.
And I thought, I've done this as a writer now. I thought maybe after a few years of being head writer, maybe there would just be something else I'd want to do or create a show as a writer or do something different.
Right. Yeah.
And then got this opportunity to do Update. And then it kind of went so badly at first for a while that I then thought I was going to lose both jobs, that I was going to be so bad at Update that I was also
really,
not going to be a writer.
Well?
Why did it go bad? What do you mean?
It just was, I think Seth was leaving. He was, you know, very loved doing the job.
Mm-hmm.
I came in, I started with Cecily Strong. We did like six episodes together. That's it at the end of the year.
Yeah.
And you know, I think I just wasn't very good at it. It's a hard thing to come in and do. And I think I was like really nervous. And I probably smiled or laughed in a way that made people think I was kind of cocky about it when I actually felt very much at sea and panicking. People were giving me all kinds of advice that was contradictory and I didn't know how to do it. And then, basically in the summer, I got told after those six episodes, like you might get to audition for it. And I was like, which seems like a bad sign to audition for the job you currently have. And then they tried me with different combinations of people also. So like I did an audition with Leslie Jones. I did an audition with Vanessa Bayer. Mm-hmm. I did an audition with Chris Kelly, who's a really funny writer at our show.
Yeah.
And I auditioned with Che, who I knew from stand-up from before he came to SNL as a writer.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I love the idea of getting to do it with him because he's really funny, but I had no idea what they were going to go with. And they also brought in Anthony Jeselnik just to audition on his own, just to go in a totally different direction, bring someone else in. And I'm sure he would have been very funny at it. And then they did these auditions, and then I didn't even know what was happening. And suddenly, so I was involved in all these processes of cast and hiring, and then suddenly I was completely cut off, really, from like all my friends for periods of time where everyone was probably nervous for me or didn't know whether I should do the job genuinely. Like, not that they were being bad friends, just probably were like, I don't know if he's right for it. And then they picked me and Che. And then for like the first 2 years at least, we thought we were going to get fired every summer. Like we were put on suspension kind of, or put on extension, and we didn't know whether we were going to get it or not. And we and then something sort of just started clicking.
Yeah.
Really, just we gave Lauren was we were lucky that he gave us enough time to start figuring it out, and then it started feeling okay, and then it started feeling better, and not like a huge existential crisis.
No, it's so well, fun to watch you guys do
have,
it.
Yeah, you guys it's have such so a great dynamic. You're so good at it.
One of the funniest things I'd ever seen was, and I couldn't believe I was watching it, and I can't believe it happened. Which is Michael told the audience before you showed up to not laugh at one joke you said. And that was the joke. And I'm watching it going, oh my God, this is horrible to watch. Like, what was going through your head?
Oh, like, I was like, it's all over. It's truly. Because it was so perfect. Genius. It was so perfect because I changed a joke between dress and air early on. Mm-hmm. And so he had told, by the way, this is the most proactive Che has ever been about anything. He went and met with the audience before they loaded in, like looked them in the eyes and were like, listen, you're not laughing. I don't care. You do not laugh at anything Colin says.
This is while they're still downstairs?
This is while I'm waiting. Yeah, they're still waiting downstairs to get loaded in. And he goes down, meets them, tells them this.
So I remember watching it. I couldn't believe it.
And then, so I changed one joke early on between dress and air. And at air, it bombs. And in my head, I'm like, oh, I shouldn't have taken that swing. But it's perfect because I could still believe it's, right. Then he goes and he crushes. Great, yeah. He kills. Does two
which
jokes,
is so
crushes.
Great.
Then it comes back to me, and I tell the next one, which worked really well at dress, and it bombs. And I'm like, oh, my God. Because at first I was like, oh, maybe it's a bad crowd. Then he crushes. So I'm like, oh, no.
Yeah. Meanwhile, he keeps looking at you like, oh, boy. Buddy.
Yeah, huh? Just not leading. And then the fourth joke bombs, and I'm truly thinking, like, my career's over. Like, it's a turned. I'm never going to get back. It's over. And someone he had a plant in the audience that he had yell out, you stink, after. So simple. So dumb.
Yeah. Just, so good.
John Higgins he just goes, you stink. Like old timey heckling.
Not you it's suck. Really you stink.
You bum. You're a bum.
And I heard that and I was like, you can tell if you look at it, in shock. And then Shay's like, dude, I gotta tell you, I told him not to laugh at anything. And I was like, you motherfucker.
Yeah,
so
it's so
angry.
Good. Such a good
was
this,
so
is
angry.
This, is this live? Is this on is
live.
This on an episode?
Yes, live.
What a great bit.
You can YouTube it. You can YouTube it.
It is so horrifying. Now you know, and you'll look and you'll be, and it's
your face.
I was genuinely traumatized for like two more shows. Because then the next show back, I didn't know what was coming.
Did you immediately start thinking about payback? Are you a prankster?
Of course.
By the way, did Che run it by Lorne? No, he just did it. He went rogue.
He did, and I think basically Lorne talked him into eventually telling me versus never telling me.
Right, right.
And which made it much better, actually, that he did tell me, and otherwise would have been perhaps. Like,
no, it's better to get your reaction on camera and see it dawn on you. I mean, it's amazing.
That's amazing. And now what I love, Colin, is you're appearing more and more as Pete Hegseth, which is so brilliant.
Oh, it's so good.
It's so good.
It's such a gift.
But does any part of you get nervous about, doing that at all?
Well, on a couple levels. I mean, first of all, I get nervous even within an SNL world because it's suddenly a new thing and a new rhythm. Like, even though I've been there for so long, coming out in the cold open is its own
so
weird
funny.
Feeling.
Yeah, but
and
dude,
after
you're
all these
so
years, it's
good at
it's
it. You've got to you don't have to admit to this, but you've got to privately just be like, so excited to go out there and show off a little bit because you're so goddamn good at what you do, whether you're doing the update or doing Hegseth. I mean, it's just I'd love to see more doing your thing.
I think it's one of my favorite politician impressions.
It's really funny
That I can remember in the long. And I'm not just saying that because you're here. It's so good.
Yeah,
but there is also the added because I mean obviously he's the Secretary of War, officially right. That's official.
Pretty awesome
that was passed
name.
By.
Yeah,
yeah.
Cool
it's
name.
The only
pretty
country
sick.
In the world where we call that department the Department of War as opposed to Department of Defense.
I think it's fun that we've now let, like, they're obviously letting school kids just name departments. Is that what's going on? So they're just war. Taking letters? Yeah, war.
You can tell the generals are just like, oh, God.
Yeah. But is there, to Sean's question, like, is there an added, is there another layer of trepidation as you've been, as much as you're comfortable telling us, has there been pushback in a weird way?
I'm definitely like a little nervous about, I kind of just think it's such in the scheme of things, like barely on his radar. Like it really does feel like there should be bigger issues.
But there's
bigger
so much satire on SNL politically, always has been. So like, how is this going to make any big, huge wave? People are conditioned to look for satire politically
on
that
show. This guy could end up having a big night. He's got a couple cocktails under his belt and he might start calling you.
There could be some vindictiveness.
Guess what? I'll bet he loves it.
The first time I did it, my younger brother was like, it's just so great that America finally gets to see the real you.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. Was like, so like, you know, what would you like to do more? I would love to see you do more acting, whether it be on SNL or not. Do you think you'd ever carve out some time to do more of that?
Well, you got coming up.
I would love it. Yeah, yes. I did this movie with Nate Bergetzi, who I love.
Called The Breadwinner.
Breadwinner that's coming out May 29th.
Yay.
Is what I'm told. And yes. I think I have a fun part. Like, Nate's basically forced to be a stay-at-home dad because his wife goes on Shark Tank and gets a lot of traction. And the Shark Tank scene is so funny. And it's so, so funny. And the sharks basically make Nate agree to be a stay-at-home dad. So his wife on camera. And I'm the only other stay-at-home dad in the neighborhood, and I'm really scared he's taking over my territory. A really funny dad that comes in, and I loved the script, and he sent it to I never think people really think of me for things, so I was very grateful that they thought of me for it, and it was really fun to do. And I got to say, getting to perform not live is even more liberating because
you can
take swings it's not, I never get a second chance at things. It's right. So liberating.
If you could wiggle your nose and have full success come as a writer or as an actor, let's say in the next 5 or 10 years, like let's say go the route of like, you know, let's say Will Ferrell or go the route of like Mike Schur. It's tough, right?
Good options. I mean, I would really love to get to perform in something outside, a thing that's my own voice and get to create. I mean, you know it well. Like it's just, that would be really satisfying. I think that
you're
would
saying
be
do
really
both
really fun
in the same project.
Yeah, maybe. Or I mean, I don't need to be. I don't need to be. I would rather be. Get to perform.
Yeah.
But I would obviously be involved in some way. I don't think would not be able to, but I would like to figure out an idea, maybe ideally both, where it's a world that's my own from my own mind too. I would love that.
And to think we almost lost you to Bear Stearns or something like that.
You're doing so much better. I could be long retired, really.
Exactly. But what about
if you gone to Bear Stearns, it would have been a disaster.
You could have become Dan Dees, you know.
Oh, the great Dan Dees.
He's the great Dan
Dees. He's the best. Colin, you also do Pop Culture Jeopardy, which is fantastic.
And wait, is that the one that's on Netflix?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's coming out on Netflix on May 11th.
Season 2, right?
Yeah, season 2. Yeah. It's really fun. Like I cannot believe the level of knowledge that these teams have about pop culture. It's really scary.
I have a surprise for these guys, which is a clip. If Bennett can play it or Rob can play it.
Oh, yeah. Wait, I don't think we've ever run a clip before.
We've never done a clip. Let's go to the clip. Oh my God. 3.
In the category of So Help Me Pod, the Smartless Podcast is hosted by this trio of funny guys, Anna Marie.
Who is Sean Hayes?
That is one Alex.
Who is Eric McCormick?
Jesus Christ.
Steve.
Who is Will Arnett?
That is the second. Uh-oh. And Ashley.
Who's Fred Armisen?
That is a person, but no. Justin.
Who is Hayes?
I'm sorry.
This is hurtful.
The one we were missing, Jason Bateman. But the other two are going to be very happy to throw it in Jason's face.
Got it. It's going to hurt in the renegotiations, but thanks for running the clip.
So let's go first reactions. Let's go around the horn. We'll start with you, Jason.
I thought that was so great.
Hey, you know what? That Jason Bateman starting to look pretty good, huh?
Nice.
Mold doesn't sound so bad.
No. Yeah. So this was not Tournament of Champions, I guess. You know, these weren't the world beaters.
No, these were the most knowledgeable.
Come
these
on.
Were like, wow. I think I was the only answer wrong in that whole game.
Jesus, that cuts deep.
Which you never see.
Almost
the point is, breadwinner, celebrity, SNL, like all of it. You have so much going on, and you have kids, and you have Scarlett, and you have like just a whole. I mean, you have a ton of stuff going on.
Yeah, you're kicking into high gear right now, and it's fun to watch, man. It's really fun to watch. It's fun. I love watching.
And he knows how to swing a golf club on top of it all.
I know. We've threatened to play.
Maybe this summer you'll be out a little bit, and we'll do it.
Yeah. We're going to be on Long Island. JP,
do you ever go to the Tahoe event or anything like that? Or are you
I'm not into the fucking rock and roll with the boats on the fairway and fucking what?
Well, now he's never going, but.
What's happening? Unplug the speakers
and let's
play
people
some
in Tahoe.
I don't understand how it's just.
We've done a couple of them before. We did the Pebble Beach back in the day.
No, that's a tournament.
That must have been fun, right?
We did that, and we've done the Genesis a few times, and
oh yeah, because in LA that's fun.
Yes, in LA. Mm-hmm. But start our own golf tournament, you guys.
Yeah, let's do that. You know
what do you say? Should we start a golf tournament?
We'll play nines
out on Long Island.
You know,
I'm in.
Keep it real.
I'm in.
We've taken up so much of your time,
so
Colin.
So much.
My God, we can talk forever to this guy. This is unbelievable.
Yeah,
Colin. I can stay. I've ton of, like a lot of time.
Oh, that's cool.
No problem. Don't even feel like you got to wrap it up.
I got to go. I'm going to have dinner with Tommy Hilfiger right now. That's a true story.
Well, talk to him. Tommy Hilfiger did an event on our Staten Island ferry.
I'm going to talk to him right now. What I'm going to say is we drag it out to Sag Harbor for the summer.
Yes, please.
Yeah. Right? Let's start talking about that.
That's what every neighbor wants to look up and see an orange vessel.
All those billionaires, they're not going to be mad at that.
No, they love it.
It's fun. It's kitschy.
Colin, thank you for being here. Your pleasure.
Thank you for bringing me in, Sean.
Yeah.
Sean, I'm sorry that we were abusive towards you and your question asking talents.
Please.
Were you able to ask our guests the things you wanted to ask?
There were some other things. There's many other things, but that's okay. We'll get it next time.
I'm sorry, Sean.
That's all right.
Will brings out the worst in me. Will's fault.
Well, get back to work, Colin. I know you have a lot of work there with it, especially cleaning up that asbestos above your head.
Yeah.
Because I can still see it. That's amazing.
I'll let you know what I find.
Thank you, my friend.
Thank you guys very much. And I would love to play this summer if you guys want to play anytime.
I'm going
to
hit you up. We're going to finally do it.
Yes, please.
Okay.
We're going to finally do it.
Bye, guys.
Okay. Bye, buddy.
Bye, Colin Jost.
Good to see you.
I'm waving like that's going to register.
It's registered.
Audio.
Audio wave.
Thanks, dude. Sean, what a great guest.
What a lovely man and a funny,
I really like Colin. He's such a funny guy.
Every time I'm with him, he's just like easy.
Well, but isn't it amazing? He's the longest. I don't know if you heard in the intro, the longest. What am I saying? Of Weekend Update, the guy who's been there the longest of anybody,
longest tenured.
Or something.
did you not sleep last night? What happened?
I'm still catching up.
Is your CPAP hose clogged? Purge your hose.
Isn't that wild, though, to know? Like, he just submitted
to SNL. It makes sense. He's so good. And Che, too. And Michael, whom I don't know.
Yeah, Michael
Che
is hilarious.
Hilarious. Those guys are so funny.
Yeah.
Wait, what was the joke somebody reminded me of that they did this last weekend? They played like a clip of Trump saying, you know, look, we're holding all the cards. And then they come back to Colin. He's like, they're literally holding a straight.
Yes, I saw that. Yeah. Yeah,
That's a good joke.
It was a pun.
It's a pun, you know? But
guys, there's a lot of purchases we've all made in our life. Okay. And, you know, what started out as this
good buys and some are bad buys? Is that what it is?
Bye.
Okay, so okay, but you're going to back
no,
into
you
it.
Finish it.
Well, why don't you give it a little bit of a head, talk about the fairy, and
yeah,
then in the
Island
middle
fairy.
Talk about
wasn't that,
sometimes there's good. You know,
yeah, I mean, yeah, the Staten. What an interesting thing to learn about that. What drew him to buy that Staten Island Ferry when he was
so
a kid?
You spent it right there. You can't say buy until the end. So
okay,
so still
purchase.
Rolling.
Okay, it was an interesting thing that he purchased that Staten Island Ferry with Pete Davidson because it brought because he took it when he was a kid to go to school.
Yeah.
So and we've all kind of made interesting purchases.
Sean's
some are some are good, some are bad, but that started out as a seemingly bad purchase, but in the end it was a good.
I know what he's gonna
buy.
Bye.
Yes. I like
Sean
this goodbye.
That's
I like
really
this
long.
Goodbye. I gotta take a leak so fucking bad.
Okay, okay love you. Think of me when you hold it.
Oh. Smart.
Smartless is 100% organic and artisanally handcrafted by Michael Grant Terry, Rob Armjarv, and Bennett Barbico.
Smart. Less.